It's only a failure if you quit. If you keep going, whatever's happened, you will move beyond. You will eventually succeed. Do not quit. Thank you so much for joining us and for being a part of the Unstoppable Woman Movement. This special series is a part of our Morning Mindset Club and comes to you here on the podcast every Saturday morning. If you'd like to join the Morning Mindset Club at no charge, you won't have to wait a whole week and can listen to this series in short daily snippets every morning. Okay, picking up where we left off, let's dive into a story about Edwin C. Barnes. So let's break this down and highlight a few more things that Hill says. He says that Barnes literally thought himself into a partnership with the great Edison. He thought himself into a fortune. He had nothing to start with except the capacity to know what he wanted and the determination to stand by that desire until he realized it. So let's keep going here. He had no money to begin with. He had but little education. He had no influence, but he did have initiative, faith, and the will to win. With these intangible forces, he made himself the number one man with the greatest inventor who ever lived. So that's pretty huge. That's pretty huge. Remember that, okay? It was a thought. It started with a thought, and he had determination to stand by that desire, okay? So we have a desire, it's a thought, and then we need determination, faith, and will, plus the ability to take action, which is that initiative, okay? Now, the next thing that I want to talk about, there's a few more parts to this chapter, or this section even, that are really critical. The biggest quote of the whole book, in fact, is in this chapter, and I'm going to read it to you right now. Listen up. Pay close attention. When the opportunity came, it appeared in a different form and from a different direction than Barnes had expected. That is one of the tricks of opportunity. It has a sly habit of slipping in the back door, and often it comes disguised in the form of misfortune or temporary defeat. Perhaps this is why so many fail to recognize opportunity. Whew! Oh my goodness gracious, that's a big one. I'm going to read it again, and then we're going to break it down. When opportunity came, it appeared in a different form and from a different direction than Barnes had expected. That is one of the tricks of opportunity. It has a sly habit of slipping in the back door. And often it comes disguised in the form of misfortune or temporary defeat. Perhaps this is why so many fail to recognize opportunity. So Barnes could have been upset and felt like a failure when Edison said, go sweep the floors, right? When Edison didn't welcome him with open arms, when it felt like a misfortune, okay? Barnes could have felt like, okay, I'll sell this thing that nobody else wants. I'll just try and do something, right? And he could have seen that as a misfortune. All of that could have been a temporary defeat, okay? But it wasn't. It turned into something amazing. And inevitably, look back on your biggest successes and see if there was not some seed of misfortune from which that came from. If you are able to turn around the things in your life that have been your greatest failures, your greatest mistakes, your greatest setbacks, things that the outside world, outside circumstances, it felt like it was limiting you, right? Like it wasn't working. The clients weren't showing up. You crashed and burned publicly. You lost all your money. You got bankrupt. Got in a fight with your lover, right? Whatever it is, what are those failures? And the greatest fortunes come often from misfortune, okay? From temporary defeat. And that's critical to recognize that it's a temporary defeat. But it can remain a permanent defeat if you let it. It's all in how you interpret that experience, and it, because your interpretation is going to change how you show up in response to it and what actions you take. How quickly can you close the gap on that to turn something that feels radically wrong or bad or like a misfortune or a negative in your life and flip it to something that's causing your greatness? Okay, next step in this chapter, very quickly, I want to riff a little bit on sales, because what did Barnes do? He decided to become a salesperson. He sold something. Now, sales is so important. If you desire wealth, riches to come to you, you need to learn sales. Money comes from source, infinite intelligence, all the energy that is abundance, okay? God, spirit. It is in the infinite. It is in the universe. But it comes to you through people, through sales. So there's two things you need to recognize here. It comes through people, not from people. The money is going through them, not from them. And it's coming from through people, not elephants, not tables, not chairs, okay, through people. So you need to build relationships with people. You need to have conversations with people. You need to be talking to people, speaking to people, engaging with people, loving people, teaching, all sorts of ways of being with people. You need to have relationships with people, okay? And you can't shy away from people, even if you're an introvert. You need to figure out how you are going to be having conversations with people, okay? Now, the second thing here is it comes from source, through people, through sales. There is always a sale. There is always a transaction. That's why salespeople are one of the highest paid professions in the world, okay? Second only to really entertainers. Entertainers are by far the highest paid profession, whether it's a sports entertainer, an athlete, or a actor or movie star, a TV star, someone on social media, someone who is entertaining us is, you know, people will pay lots of money for that. And we can go into a whole discussion of why that is some later date. That's a little bit of a tangent. But second to that is sales. And if you are in business for yourself, you need to know sales. You need to understand it. It is so critical. If you run away from it because you don't want to be salesy, or you have money stories, or you don't want to be rejected, or you want to make everyone happy and you feel like that's going to put them off, you are going to limit yourself. You are going to keep yourself from your riches, okay? Everyone who's in business for themselves is in some sort of sales, okay? And quite frankly, we're always selling. You're selling to your partner when you make an argument for Italian food versus Chinese food that night. Think about it, okay? And you really have to get good with you have to get good with money. You have to get good with sales. You have to get good with asking for sales. You have to get good with sales being service, and really mastering this. That's how you are going to translate your idea into riches. You have to not run from sales, but embrace it. Okay, it's one key thing here. And when Barnes did that, he ended up creating a whole new channel of Edison's business that hadn't been there before, a whole new money stream. And it turned into $2 to $3 million, which in the 1920s was massive, okay? Massive, 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 massive. Okay? So keep that in mind as you think about your business today. Are you engaging in sales? Are you enjoying sales? Are you embracing sales? Are you loving sales? And if you're not, what's stopping you? Let's unpack that. Okay, let's start with the next section in chapter one in the introduction. And this section is entitled 3 Feet from Gold. This is one of those stories that so many people quote and refer back to. You will hear that expression, 3 feet from gold, 3 feet from gold. And it's so important. So I highly suggest that you read this story and reread it several times. It's only a couple pages long, right? It's 1, 2, 3 pages long, but it's so powerful. Read it several times. Repetition is the mother skill. Repetition is how you're going to get this information into your subconscious and really grok it and make it your own. Okay, we're going to start by reading a little bit of it and then take it from there. One of the most common causes of failure is the habit of quitting when one is overtaken by temporary defeat. Every person is guilty of this mistake at one time or another. Okay, already so much power in these words. One of the most common causes of failure is the habit of quitting when one is overtaken by temporary defeat. So let's flesh this out. It's a habit. It's a habit of quitting when you reach some sort of temporary defeat, some sort of obstacle, some sort of challenge. It's a habit of stopping, of giving up. Now, the beautiful thing is it's just a habit, which means that you can change that. You can transform that habit by doing it differently. When you are struck by temporary defeat or a challenge in front of you, do not quit. It's as easy as that. Keep going. I just sent a friend a mug, and if you have kids, please mute this because I'm about to swear. And the mug said, "Keep fucking going." I designed it myself. I was really quite proud of it. Not the saying, but the mug. And because when you are struck by the hard, the challenge, the effort, you have to keep fucking going. You cannot quit. But people have been trained to quit. It's a habit. And you have to break that habit. And we break that by doing it differently, compassionately, lovingly with ourselves, recognizing that we're quitting, recognizing that we are letting the outside circumstance be a story that we tell ourselves that we should stop. It's nonsense. If you want to create your life, you cannot let outside experiences determine how you show up, and you cannot quit. Okay? Now, failure is only failure if you quit, which is embedded in this sentence right here. It's only a failure if you quit. If you keep going, whatever's happened, you will move beyond. You will eventually succeed. Do not quit unless you want failure. Okay. So let me recap the story of 3 Feet from Gold right now. And then please do read it yourself. So there's a man named R.U. Darby, D-A-R-B-Y. And he gets gold fever and he goes out west and he's in Colorado and he's gold mining and he finds a vein of gold and he closes it back up so it won't be discovered. And he goes back home to the East Coast and he asks his friends and family to invest the money in the machinery that's required to mined this gold, and he gets a goodly amount of investment from people, goes back out to Colorado, starts mining the gold, they take out one lot of it, and that's halfway to repaying everyone, and then the vein of gold dries up. And he tries a number of times to find the vein again and cannot find it. And he quits. He stops. And he's like, oh my God. That was it. That was all there was. And he goes back home, and eventually he pays back all the people who he borrowed money from, which is an important part of this story, to be good to your word and do whatever it takes to pay back people and keep your word. But there's another aspect of this story, which is that a junk man bought his equipment and went and investigated that vein and couldn't figure it out himself, but was smart enough to hire an expert engineer to figure out if there was anything more to the mine. And the engineer did some research and advised him that the vein of gold picked up 3 feet from where Darby stopped. 3 feet. 3 feet. That junk man took millions of dollars in ore from the mine because he knew enough to seek expert counsel before giving up. Whew. Now that's a clue to success right there. So you'd think Darby loses, Junkman wins, Darby's crushed for life, nothing else happens for him. But no, that is not how Darby interpreted the story. That is not what he made use of here. Instead, in his own words, Darby profited by the experience in his chosen work, which was later to become selling life insurance, by the simple method of saying to himself, I stopped 3 feet from gold, but I will never stop because men say no when I ask them to buy insurance. He took that experience and profited from it. He did not get stopped by temporary misfortune. Now that's a huge misfortune. That could have been, all of those millions could have been his. And he could go to his deathbed being bitter and regretful, but instead, he transformed it into something powerful that allowed him to have all the opportunities come to him. So back to that statement, when the opportunity came, it appeared in a different form and from a different direction. Remember that from the Barnes story. And this is true here as well. Darby Hill says, Darby is one of the small group of fewer than 50 men who sell more than $1 million in life insurance annually. Now, this was back in the 20s, so that's a huge amount. He owes his stickability to the lesson he learned from the quitability in the gold mining business. So he really made his pain his gain. And to finish out this section, let's read this last little bit. Before success comes in any man's life, he is sure to meet with much temporary defeat and perhaps some failure. When defeat overtakes a man, the easiest and most logical thing to do is quit. That is exactly what the majority of men, in our case, women, do. More than 500 of the most successful men this country has ever known told the author, Hill, their greatest success came just one step beyond the point at which defeat had overtaken them. Failure is a trickster with a keen sense of irony and cunning. It takes great delight in tripping one when success is almost within reach. Do not quit. Do not stop. Be unbelievable. unstoppable. Okay, in this next section of chapter one, we get to a story called A 50 Cent Lesson in Persistence. And Darby is in this story as well, and he's recounting an incident that he witnesses where he learns the lesson that no does not mean no, and the power of persistence. There are a few other lessons to pull out here, which we are about to dive into. So Darby is in the mill house of his uncle, and a little African-American girl comes in and asks his uncle for 50 cents because her mother desperately needs it. We don't know the reason why. We don't know anything else as part of this story. But it was in a day and age when that was unheard of, and it was in a part of the country where there were specific roles that African Americans played and that white people played, and that this was contrary to that power dynamic. So she comes in and she asks the uncle for 50 cents and for her mother. And he says no and pretty much get lost. And what does she do? She says, yes, sir, and stands there. And he says, get lost again. And she says, yes, sir, and stands there. And then on the third time, she defiantly screams, I must have that money. I need that. Give it to me, basically. I'm not quoting her. You can read the quote in the story. It's well worth reading the story numerous times. And so at that point, the uncle gets furious and he's about to basically whip her, and instead pauses, thinks about it, gives her the 50 cents. And she backs out of there and gets the hell out of there before he changes his mind. And Darby witnessed this. It was very formative in his life. So let's pull out the lessons here. So this little girl did not back down with fear. She wanted it badly enough. Something was driving her so ferociously that it was more important for her to face her fear and face the wrath of this white man who could beat her at will, that she was willing to stand her ground. And she did it by agreeing with him and continuing to stake her claim. So two things there. One thing that you need, and this was a sale, by the way. She sold him on this. This was a transaction. This was a sale. And she had more certainty than he did. And that is a very important point. But in sales, when someone objects to whatever you're selling and says, it's not the right time, I need to ask my partner, I have to think about it, I don't have the money, whatever the common things, these are alibis and excuses that people come up with in order not to step forward in their life and create what they want to create or have what they want to have or whatever it is. And you've said it many, many times, and you hear people saying it many, many times. And when you catch yourself saying those things now, pay attention and step into truth about what's going on there. But when that happens and you're in a conversation with someone, whether it's about 50 cents or $1 million sale, doesn't matter. Agree with them. Agree with their objection. Agree with where they're at, because it's true for them, but it's not the truth with a capital T. Excuse me. It's not the truth with a capital T. So you say, yes, yes, sir. Yep, that's true. Yep. Okay. But you don't back down. You don't run away. If you want it badly enough, you will stand your ground. And making a claim is so important here. You must ask, you must knock, you must seek, and you must continue. This is a lesson in persistence. But it's also a lesson in certitude. The person with the most certainty wins in everything in life. Think about that. That's a big, important nugget there. So we just talked about lessons here and analyzing them, which is very important. But I also want to point out here that he says both successes and failures have their roots in simple experiences. The difference between success and failure is minuscule. They live adjacent to each other. It is what you do with the experience that either creates the success or the failure. This is hugely important. The other thing that I'd like to ask you here is to actually apply this. What are two or three past experiences that have been either failures or, say, emotionally impactful or resonant, like the 50 cent lesson, that you could learn from and use them to serve you? So I have a story from my childhood, which I will share with you as an example, which is I was in high school and there was another girl in high school, we were girls back then, who started a business providing catering staff to caterers. And she employed other high school students and taught them what to do and trained them up and was making a great living doing this. Great money, even though she was in high school doing this. So it wasn't quite her full-time job. And my father heard me talking about it, and I had been on her staff, and he was super excited by this idea. And he's like, you could do this too. Go do this. Go make this happen. Go create basically the same business. And I tried to start doing that, and ultimately I had a conversation with her that was very awkward because I basically was, going in on her business, like trying to take a bit of her business away from her because it was in the same area in the same spot and with the same people and all of that. And it was a very awkward conversation and it felt horrible. And in fact, the whole experience felt horrible from the get-go. And I at the time, it just felt bad, like I had done something wrong. And I couldn't really pull the lesson from it. But in hindsight, it's very clear to me what the lessons are. And that is to be inspired by, but not copy other people. You have to be your own person in what you do. You can't just copycat and coin what other people are doing. Yes, you can learn. Yes, you can model. But you have to be your own creative being, not just taking what someone else is doing. And that means being fully expressed and getting your own divine downloads and also trusting yourself. Plus, I was doing it for my father. Oh my God, can you believe that? How many of us have done that? Raise your hand right now. So oftentimes we do things for other people, to please other people, the classic people-pleasing situation. And I learned from that experience that I can't do things for other people like that, that just does not work for me. So what are your lessons? Take a moment to really think, what have been some of the stories or experiences that you've had that have been extraordinarily impactful, and analyze them, pull out the lessons there. Okay, the next bit that I want to share with you is one of my favorite lines in the whole book. Okay, so two of them, both in the introduction. And this is a jam-packed book full of nuggets, so that's saying something. When riches begin to come, they come so quickly and in such great abundance that one wonders where they have been hiding during all those lean years. This is an astounding statement, and all the more so when we take into consideration the popular belief that riches come only to those who work long, hard and long. Whew. Boy, do I love this. So let's break it. Let's read that first part again. When riches begin to come, they come so quickly in such great abundance that one wonders where they have been hiding during all those lean years. Now, this is my story, right? For the first 3 years of my business, although I was making money, it was a struggle. It was not significant. And then I had my breakthrough, and I went from making $138 a year to $700K in 1 year. That's five times in 1 year. And I've never looked back. It continues to grow, okay? Reach seven figures, keep going, right? And yet, that was massive in a very short period of time. And I've had this experience. When riches begin to come, they come so quickly and in such great abundance that one wonders where they have been hiding during all those lean years. It's like a pinch me moment, okay? So it doesn't mean that the growth doesn't stop or that there won't be more challenges in front of you or that you won't want to make additional revenue. All of that is true. But something clicks, and when it does, you can never go back. You're like, wow, where was it all? Why was it so hard before? Why was it such a struggle before? When it's so easy now. And that flip, when you switch it, is truly astounding. I'm going to keep going on here to the next quote that I want to pull out, which is, one of the main weaknesses of mankind is the average man's familiarity with the word impossible. He knows all the rules which will not work. He knows all the things which cannot be done. This book was written for those who seek the rules which have made others successful and are willing to stake everything on those rules. A great many years ago, I purchased a fine dictionary. The first thing I did with it was turn to the word impossible and neatly clip it out of the book. That would not be an unwise thing for you to do. Success comes to those who become success conscious. Failure comes to those who indifferently allow themselves to become failure conscious. The object of this book is to help all who seek it to learn the art of changing their minds from failure consciousness to success consciousness. Woo! Love that. Okay. So there's a habit. There's what we've been trained to do, to think it's impossible, to be failure conscious. Okay? To pay attention and look at and give energy to all the things that aren't working, all the struggles, all the roadblocks, all the reasons why it can't happen, why you're not capable, why you can't do it, why you should stop. That is not how to be unstoppable. If you want to be unstoppable, you have to have success consciousness. You have to look at how you can succeed, how it can work, where the opportunities are, what the things you can do are, and get started with that. That is what you need to focus on. That is how you go and shift from failure consciousness to success consciousness. And this is a progressive, ongoing activity. It requires study, mentors, actions, experience, application, growth, having a growth mindset. And it's why I keep studying and why I keep working with mentors. You have to stay focused on success and keep your mind right around that. He goes on to say, another weakness found in altogether too many people is the habit of measuring everything and everyone by their own impressions and beliefs. Some who will read this will believe that no one can think and grow rich. They cannot think in terms of riches because their thought habits have been steeped in poverty, want, misery, failure, defeat. These unfortunate people remind me of a prominent Chinese man who came to America to be educated in American ways. He attended the University of Chicago. One day, President Harper met this young man on the campus, stopped to chat with him for a few minutes, and asked what had impressed him as being the most noticeable characteristic of American people. "Why?" the man exclaimed. "The queer slant of your eyes. Your eyes are all off slant." "Huh. What do we say about the Chinese? We refuse to believe that which we do not understand. We foolishly believe that our own limitations are the proper measure of limitations." And he goes on here. So think about this. Because of your upbringing, because of your culture, because of your circumstances, who you have been surrounded with, what beliefs you have been indoctrinated in, what experiences and limitations you've had in your life experience will determine what you think is possible, how you see the world. Because you are inside of them. You are living them. And until someone holds a light up to them, you will stay stuck within those beliefs. And that's why they are called limiting beliefs. Most people would rather stay comfortable in their beliefs and struggling and miserable because that's what they're used to than to have someone shine a light up on it, on them. They're too afraid of being wrong. This is a huge thing that stops people. They would rather stay committed to who they are being and what they are doing and what they're believing than have someone who is further along than they shine a light on them with truth and have them be wrong. They're afraid of being wrong, and this holds them back. I made a decision, and it is a decision a long time ago, to accept the truth. And quite frankly, you must do that if you want to succeed. Accept the truth. Make the decision to accept the truth. Truth with a capital T. And I decided to accept the truth and listen to my mentors. Did it hurt sometimes? Yes. Was I confronted with things I did not want to see, that did not feel good to see, that felt bad? Absolutely. But what I did was I did everything they said anyway. When they said, invest in this program, do this, I said yes, even when I didn't have the money. When they said, go fly first class, I did it, even when I didn't have the money, even when I didn't understand why that made sense. When they said, go to this conference, do this kind of marketing, do this, be that, follow this, read this, I did it as quickly as I could, despite the discomfort I felt in it, because I was willing to move through my limiting beliefs. I was committed to that. When they showed me my inaccurate thinking, I didn't fight them, get pissy, or blame them. I took a deep breath and I committed to my growth. I said, okay, I'm in it. I'm all in. I'm all in. What if they are right? What if they're coming from a higher level of awareness? What if it didn't make me wrong, but made me bigger, larger, more expansive? What if it got me to a higher level of awareness and beingness to accept the truth rather than fight the truth? So my question for you today is, how quickly can you do this? How committed are you to your truth? And how willing are you to go all in your pursuit of your dreams? These are the questions you need to ask yourself. Okay, that's a good stopping point for today. Thank you so much for joining us and for being part of the Unstoppable Woman Movement. This special series is a part of our Morning Mindset Club and comes to you here on the podcast every Saturday morning. If you'd like to join the Morning Mindset Club at no charge, you won't have to wait a whole week and can listen to this series in short daily snippets every morning. Plus, you'll get a quick implementation practice and mastery check-in to go along with it. You can find the Morning Mindset Club info in the show notes below, or just head over to theunstoppablewoman.com/mindsetclub. And as always, please share this podcast with two or three women who are ready for exponential growth and exponential wealth. And if you're game, we always appreciate a review on iTunes. That really helps us reach and elevate more women. Thanks so much, and be unstoppable.